I got hooked on the work of Scott Turow many years ago when I read Presumed Innocent. Picked it up and didn't put it down until I had gotten to the end, at which point I said, wow. And then a couple of years later, it got turned into a pretty good movie with Harrison Ford and Raul Julia and Bonnie Bedelia. And since then, he's written many more books, including Burden of Proof and Personal Injuries and Ordinary Heroes. And now he has a new one out called Limitations, and he's going to be here in St. Louis doing a book signing and talking about that book tonight at the St. Louis County Library on South Lindbergh at 7 o'clock. And our KMOX colleague Mark Reardon will be the MC for that event. And I'm happy to welcome Scott back to the show this afternoon on KMOX. Hi, how are you?
I'm fine, Paul. Thank you for having me.
It's always a pleasure talking to you. You go back to Kendall County for this one, huh?
Yeah, I give up the battlefields of World War II, which was the site of Ordinary Heroes, and return to my home, as it were, in Kendall County. And the familiar character, Judge George Mason, is the sort of center of this story.
Does Rusty Savage also make an appearance?
Yes, Rusty. Rusty comes back from the nearly forgotten to also. Rusty is the chief judge of the appellate court where Judge Mason sits, and he's sort of George's alter ego.
Now, as I recall, Mason was a criminal defense attorney.
Correct. Mason was a criminal defense lawyer. He was the narrator and defense lawyer for Robbie Favor in Personal Injuries. And actually, he's a character who made his first appearance in his cups in Presumed Innocent and had a brief conversation with Rusty Savage there.
Oh, okay. Now, as a criminal defense attorney, becoming a judge, how often does that really happen?
It happens quite a bit, actually. Generally speaking, most systems, whether they're appointed or elected, try to balance things out so that former prosecutors and former defense lawyers both come to the bench, especially in the criminal court. So it's not that unusual at all.
Now, you yourself have spent a long time on the plaintiff's side. In fact, you're still a working attorney. Ever wanted to be a judge?
You know, when I was an assistant U.S. attorney in Chicago, that was kind of a dream. And when I started to write Presumed Innocent, or actually started to finish it in a summer away from the law, generally speaking, I only hoped to publish the book, but there was one afternoon when I had this vision of everything that eventually happened with that novel, and I thought, well, gee, if all of that really goes down, if it's a big bestseller and a movie, I won't be able to become a judge. And it was almost like making a bargain with either a deity or a devil, and I said, okay, I'll do that. I'll take that deal. I'll be the best-selling novelist instead of a judge, and sort of left it in the dust at that moment.
Now, why would the career as a writer of fiction preempt you becoming a judge?
You know, I think that there's a kind of... First of all, I was thinking of being a federal judge, which meant I would have to survive confirmation hearings. And, you know, there are a million remarks in a novel that can come back to bite you. But the biggest thing is that the time commitment to the career as a writer is something that I would want to make and wouldn't want to give up, and you can't balance the two. I do have a friend in Chicago, Jim Zagel, who's a federal judge and has published one novel, but you know, it takes him years to get it done.
Limitations is the story of four white high school hockey players who are charged with the rape of a black girl.
Mm-hmm.
You were writing this all last year and serializing it in the New York Times Sunday Magazine at the same time that we were getting the Duke lacrosse case.
Right.
Was that an influence on you?
No, not at all. Actually, the draft of Limitations was completed before the Duke case broke. It didn't bother the New York Times Sunday Magazine, though, and they, of course, featured the quote that basically summarizes what you just said on the cover of the magazine when Limitations began to run. They obviously thought I was onto something newsworthy.
Mm-hmm. Did you write the whole book and then give it to them to serialize? Or...
Yeah, I tried to. I had been advised by my two predecessors about some of the pitfalls of this process. So I finished a draft in advance. I broke it into the 16 equal chunks that the Times required, and they really were very good to work with, except that the final editing was done on a weekly basis. And even when I knew there were problems down the road, because they, you know, they're journalists and they work in an everlasting present, I couldn't get them to focus on the future. So that was the only difficulty, is that every week was a fire drill on Wednesday afternoon. You know, the fact checkers would call me, there would be editorial questions, and you know, everything had to get fixed on the fly.
And you kept saying to them, I gave you the whole thing already.
I did it twice or three times and then gave up and just, you know, I went with the flow.
Now, at the same time, you've got readers who are reading this only a week at a time. Of course, they are waiting 4 months to find out how the whole thing turns out.
Right.
Did you have people calling you and saying, okay, you got to tell me?
Oh, a few, of course. You know, the good friends all call you. And, you know, one of my colleagues, Ann Melissa Dowling, a friend in Connecticut, was emailing me week by week with her guesses as to who the culprit was. People were sort of kidding me, but they were pretty good spirited about waiting for the end.
It's News Talk 1120 KMOX. Paul Harris talking with Scott Turow, the master of the legal thriller, who will be in town tonight doing a book signing for his new one called Limitations, 7 o'clock tonight at the St. Louis County on South Lindbergh. You can pick up a copy there, and he'll be more than happy to sign it for you. And talking about the book and doing a Q&A on it as well. Scott, I know from my dad's experience, he wrote several nonfiction books, that the bane of his existence was people with book ideas. They would come up to him all the time and say, I have a great idea for a book. All you have to do is write it.
Yeah, they, and that was, of course, Paul, in the days before email. So they have no trouble finding me. And there are several every day. Ordinary Heroes, which was about a son recapturing his father's World War II experience, has been particularly a particular lightning rod that way. And I get several people a week who want me to write my next book about their father's World War II experiences. And as I explain, I had one father, and I will write one novel based on my father's experiences, not theirs.
When you do these book signings, do people come up to you with drafts of ideas? And
you know, very rarely people will come up at a book signing with something on paper. They, generally speaking, write first. Occasionally things land in my inbox at the law office in Chicago. But, you do get besieged by people who want either help finding an agent, getting published, or most of all, a blurb for their book, which, you know, they think will either sell it or help sell copies if it's going to be published.
Does that ever, I mean, you've had several of these things out. Does that ever help to have a quote from some other author on the back of your book? Do people going through a Borders or a Barnes & Noble see that and go, oh, well, if he liked it, I'm going to like it?
You know, based on what people say to me, oh, I bought that book because I saw your name on it. Now, these are friends. I think it must work. Given a choice between knowing absolutely nothing or knowing that some writer whom you've heard of or even respect says this is a good book, I guess it does sell copies.
It must, because they keep doing it.
Right.
Yeah.
Although, you know, there are a lot of things in publishing that they keep doing without any idea whether or not they really work.
I won't go too far into that because I don't want you to step on any toes here.
No, I mean, I tell my friends in publishing all the time, this is only a reasonable facsimile of a business. It's not really a business.
In Limitations, I mentioned before the plot and bringing back some of your old characters, but one essential part of the plot in the book is a crime caught on video.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm curious about that because now in the YouTube generation, there is even more video than ever being captured. I contend that nothing in America happens without somebody getting a picture of it or video of it.
Well, you know, with these video cameras, I remember a couple of years ago, I was playing at Whistling Straits with my friend Mark Berry, who lives here in St. Louis, and took me 8 strokes to get out of a sand trap, and darn me if he didn't capture it all on video. So you're right about that. There's even the most embarrassing moments seem to be photographed these days.
And how is that affecting the legal field?
Well, it's certainly the most noticeable impact, of course, comes in the criminal law, where very often you find that particularly that bystanders are no longer bystanders. They're often photographers.
Right.
So there are a lot of crimes that end up being prosecuted these days because somebody has a camera on their cell phone and manages to capture images of what's happening. A lot of the time, It involves overreaching by police officers, but that's not all. Often it's offenders. You know, license plates are photographed as cars are speeding away. There are all kinds of instances where, you know, we really are a society where no image is lost anymore.
Right. But I would think also that in a world where eyewitness testimony can be so dicey, mm-hmm. particularly months and maybe a couple of years
sure.
later when you finally get to the
sure.
trial, actually having somebody whip out their cell phone and catching evidence on their camera probably is helpful to the judicial process.
You know, accuracy is always helpful to the judicial process. And, you know, forensics have changed dramatically. DNA, you know, ballistics is greatly improved. And, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. You know, anybody who works in that system wants it to be accurate. And, you know, I was involved in the Death Penalty Commission in Illinois, and we recommended and eventually became law that the statements by murder suspects need to be recorded. And, you know, this is one of those things that the police initially resist. And, of course, they find when they do it that their conviction rates go way up because all of a sudden there are no questions. There are no spurious motions to suppress. The confession is right there. The jury can hear it. They know that nobody took a truncheon to the defendant. And, you know, all of this stuff it's what we want. We want the system to work. We want the bad guys to go to jail and the good guys to go free. And so this kind of, you know, scientific evidence or electronics is fine. It's fine with me.
And by the way, if all of that stuff had been there, Rusty Savage would have had a much easier time in the first book.
Well, I actually, we'll see about that because I'm working on a sequel now.
Oh, a presumed innocence sequel?
Yes, I am. That's finally, 20 years later, it's time for Rusty to return to center stage. And actually, in writing Limitations, I'd had the idea of the center of Limitations is the idea of a judge who can't decide a case because the conduct in question reminds him of his own. And when the Times approached me about doing this serial, for the first couple of days, I thought, you know, that the character was going to be Rusty Savage. And then I had a note on my desk about a man who is sitting on a bed in which the body of a woman lies. And as I began thinking for these 2 days that it was Rusty, I suddenly realized that the man sitting on that bed was Rusty Savage. And that, therefore, I'd have to have another character be the center of Limitations and immediately remembered that I had put George Mason also on the appellate court and was happy to make George's reacquaintance and let him live out the story of Limitations.
Scott Turrell will be signing copies of Limitations and talking about it tonight at 7 at the St. Louis County Library on South Lindbergh. And you can look for my buddy Mark Reardon, fellow KMOX radio host, who will be the MC for that event tonight. Scott, it's always a pleasure having you back on the show.
Thank you again for having me again.
Always great. Scott Turrell here on the Paul Harris Show on News Talk 1120 KMOX.